copyright Forum of Christian Leaders. The contents contained on this website are solely for your own individual, non-commercial, and informational use. Any other use is strictly prohibited without our express prior written consent. See the full copyright disclosure at focalonline.org.
What I'm going to do is I'm going to explain where revitalization fits in our denominational or network strategy. I'll probably talk for about 30 minutes or so, give you an overview, and then open for questions for you to ask whatever you want. So in many ways, I'm going to be sharing our story, not telling you how to do it, and I hope that there might be some lessons that you can draw from what we have done and from what we have learnt. Now, I don't know what denomination or network or background you come from. I'm an independent evangelical. I'm a Baptist by the kind of the way we practice baptism, but I'm committed to independent churches rather than power denominational structures. But I see that in the Bible very clearly there is a pattern of senior leaders who help and support local churches. So although local churches have their own leaders, have their own elders, I think that there is a pattern of senior, experienced leaders who help and support local churches, who help them to remain faithful to the gospel, and who address issues within the life of the church. Some denominations do that in a very structured way with bishops or moderators or presbyteries. We as independents do it a little bit more informally, but we are still committed to senior, experienced leaders helping local churches. And I think we find that as a biblical pattern. So let me just read from Acts chapter 14. Paul and Barnabas have been church planting, and then they revisit the churches in order to be able to strengthen them, encourage them, and appoint appropriate leaders. So we read in Iconium, Paul and Barnabas went as usual into the... verse 21. They preached the gospel in that city and won a large number of disciples. Then they returned to Lystra, Iconium, and Antioch, strengthening the disciples and encouraging them to remain true to the faith. We must go through many hardships to enter the kingdom of God, they said. Paul and Barnabas appointed elders for them in each church, and with prayer and fasting committed them to the Lord in whom they put their trust. And we find that pattern a number of times. Now, they were apostles. They had a unique ministry. But later in the New Testament, we find Paul sending others to go and help churches. So Paul sent Timothy, his representative, to Ephesus. Paul sent Titus to Crete, and he sent them to sort out problems in the church. I think that the church in Ephesus needed revitalizing. Timothy went to do that work of sorting out problems of false teaching, making sure there was the right leadership, so the church could become healthy. Titus was doing the same in Crete. So there was a pattern of senior leaders being sent to help deal with problems in churches so they can be healthy and so that the gospel can grow. So I think we see a pattern there of networks or denominations supporting churches and helping to revitalize churches. Paul, as a leader, as an apostle, felt the burden of the churches and the struggles the churches were facing. He cared about them. And actually, we see the Lord Jesus himself, in particularly the book of Revelation, writing to the churches, sending them letters. He's essentially revitalizing them, telling them what they need to put right so that they can become thriving churches and not die. So I think this is a biblical work that is part of the way we support churches and the gospel. Let me tell you a little bit about my network. I'm the national director of something called the Fellowship of Independent Evangelical Churches. We've existed since 1922, so almost 95 years. Our churches are united by core gospel beliefs, but have a wide variety of views on secondary issues, like baptism, eschatology, charismatic movement. There'd be a diversity in the churches, but united by the core gospel convictions. We have about 600 churches that belong to our network. Currently, we're growing with new churches joining us and new churches being planted. I've been a national director for 8 years. And when I was invited to become national director, my job was really to revitalise the network. The network had become perhaps quite conservative. Most of the churches were smaller and traditional. That would have been the culture of many, but not all of the churches. Some people wondered whether the network had a future. And I had the privilege of being able to help revitalise the network with some great colleagues and try to become a growing gospel movement again. Our goal is to support and encourage our churches and their leaders so they can be effective in their gospel ministry. We're not a denomination because we have no power over our churches. We can only influence them and encourage them. But I cannot tell any of our church leaders what to do. They are independent churches. But we want them to work together and care for one another and foster relational connection. So we have 600 churches, but the spiritual situation in my country, in the UK, is difficult, but I know not as difficult as some countries in Europe. Only about 3% of people are evangelical Christians. Many of the churches that are not evangelical are declining very rapidly. In the non-evangelical churches, the congregations are very old and no young people are joining. So churches are dying and closing. Amongst many of the evangelical churches, some that are older and traditional are also aging and declining. But the general spiritual background is of slow growth amongst evangelicals who are preaching the Bible and seeking to reach their communities. As a network, our vision is to want to be independent churches working together to reach the nation with the gospel. So we have a collective gospel vision. That's why our network exists. We don't want to exist just to defend orthodox evangelical doctrine. We want to see the gospel going out to lost people. And we think the best way that can happen is through thriving, lively churches in every community. And so we want to work together to do that. I have a staff team who work with me, who oversee areas of our ministry like caring for pastors, training, planting, revitalization, women's ministry, providing practical support for churches. So I have a core staff team of about 8 or 9 people who are working to support our churches. What is our gospel strategy? In many ways, it's very simple. We want to see a thriving, healthy church in every community. Every city, every town, every area. That's a big vision and we're nowhere near fulfilling it. But that's what we want to see. So that the 97% of people who don't know Christ will be reached with the gospel. Or have opportunity to be reached with the gospel. We want to do really 3 things to bring that about. We want to help existing thriving churches to grow. So we want them to have bigger gospel ambition, to want to grow their ministries. We want to plant new churches where there is no church. So at the moment we're planting a new church about once a month into a variety of different contexts. It's vital that we have churches in towns, estates, areas where there's no church. And then we've realised that a third important part of our gospel strategy is revitalisation. That if we want to reach the nation, we want to revitalise churches that have stalled or are dying and have become ineffective in their gospel ministry. So perhaps the most important thing is that as a network, we realised that revitalisation was a vital gospel strategy. That it wasn't about simply keeping churches open or stopping churches dying, but it was a way of advancing the gospel in the nation. When I became national director, most of my work for the first few years was encouraging larger churches to join us. The larger churches with new and younger leaders who had gospel energy. And it was vital that they joined the network. So in the early years, most of my time was spent connecting with the leaders of growing churches. But once that had happened, we realised, and I realised, we needed to connect with and invest in our smaller churches as well. Of our 600 churches, about 200 were small churches that were not growing. So roughly a third of the churches were likely to die unless they changed. So we had 120 new churches join us with lots of gifted leaders and vision, but we had a significant number of small churches who in many ways felt we were not caring for them, that we were only interested in the larger churches. And what we discovered is we needed to have a gospel strategy for those smaller churches. So our revitalisation strategy was to try to help as many of those 160 churches to become thriving churches and to engage with them. Now, we knew that some of those churches, it would be best for them to close. They might be in a place where a church wasn't needed anymore because there was another bigger, thriving church that was already doing the job. You don't just keep a church alive just because it's there. If there's another church which is already doing the work of the gospel, that's a waste of resources. So we knew that some wouldn't or shouldn't continue. But we knew that many of those 160 churches were in strategic places where there was no other gospel witness. And so we wanted them to become living churches again, to reach their communities. For us, understanding the potential of revitalisation and seeing that if some of these churches could be turned around, then that would lead to the growth of the gospel. So in order to accomplish that, we collectively put together a team to start thinking about church revitalisation. So a number of interested practitioners and people who had a gospel heart began to meet together to think about how we could help those smaller churches. They investigated other models of revitalisation from around the world and began to think what would work for our group of churches. They developed some tools to help engage with churches and help churches evaluate their situation. We were helped by the fact that one of my key members of staff had good relationships with many of these churches already. So there was already some relational connection. But we put a team together to think through strategically how we could help them. We also began to try, we then eventually reached a point at which we realised we needed somebody to have the time and the energy to devote to revitalisation. So we felt we needed to appoint somebody to work full time on that role. We discovered revitalisation is a very slow process. It is mainly relational, about connecting with churches and their leaders, and the greatest difficulty is a lack of time to do that work. And we needed to employ someone to take revitalisation forwards, and we raised money to appoint somebody to a full-time post, which is Phil. Not with the view that Phil would do all of the revitalisation, but that he could empower a team to do revitalisation. So we found it very time and relationally intensive, and therefore we've wanted to put somebody in place to do that. So really what we began to do was develop a strategic plan for revitalisation, for connecting with those churches and then seeing how we might be able to help them. We also felt it was hugely important to mobilise the whole constituency of churches. We realised revitalisation would probably only happen if all the churches understood why it was important and had a vision for it. One of our problems was that many of the larger churches thought most of the smaller churches should shut. They thought the smaller churches were wasting resources and that they were incapable of being transformed, which is often the mindset of young, gifted, church-planting pastors. They see small churches with old leaders stuck in the past, and they tend to think, what's the point? They'd rather start something new than revitalise. But we needed the whole constituency of churches to understand why revitalisation was a gospel strategy for the nation. And so through our leaders' gatherings, we've tried to communicate a gospel vision for revitalisation and to get our larger churches on board with revitalising and to see the potential so that they will invest time and money. And in many ways, I think that is the most important thing we've done, is help the larger churches to catch a vision for revitalisation, so that the younger leaders think both about church planting and revitalisation as twin strategies to grow the gospel. So we've wanted to mobilise the constituency, connect the churches that are interested in revitalisation with those that want revitalisation. And the result of that strategy, which is relatively new, is we have seen a number of successful revitalisations. Churches that have been transformed, maybe new leadership has been brought in, the people have a new future. A larger church has sent a team of people to come and join the church and transform it. So there have been some successful now models of revitalisation. And the result is that others are catching the vision because they can see that it can be done. So why did we think revitalisation was an important gospel strategy? There are, I think, some advantages to revitalisation over and against church planting. And it helped us to understand this. I should say, I myself have planted two new churches. I was involved in a failed church revitalisation and then planted instead. So I had to be persuaded of the value of revitalisation, because my experience was it's better to plant. But I've learnt that revitalisation is just as an important a strategy. And for a number of reasons. It may be different in your country, but these are, in my country, important reasons. Firstly, churches that need revitalising often have buildings. They often have buildings. In my country, it is increasingly difficult to get buildings for churches. It's difficult to buy them because they're expensive. It's difficult to get permission to build them, often because of parking requirements. And many of my newly planted churches are struggling for lack of a building. They have to hire. In the past, we have allowed too many church buildings to be sold, to be turned into houses, cinemas, mosques. And now we're looking at them saying, I wish I could have planted there. Many churches that need revitalisation may have good buildings. It might have decayed, might not have been looked after, but it's still a building where you have permission to meet as a church. And more than that, they may have a good plot of land on which you could build a better building in 10 years' time. So there are advantages with revitalisation because of buildings. Sometimes they have a core congregation of committed people. Those people may be older, but in many cases they are just discouraged. And what they have lacked is good leadership. They have become stuck because they've not known what to do. Now, sometimes their core congregation may be very resistant to change. But in other situations, if they have a gospel heart, they will love a new hope and future for their church. In many cases, they have just not known what to do, or they've not been able to solve a leadership problem in the church. I have seen a number of situations where there was a small elderly congregation who seemed traditional and discouraged, but they have come to life when a group of younger Christians and a younger leader have come to revitalise the church. And then they become excited about the gospel again. They see the benefits of change. Thirdly, many churches that need revitalisation already have some connection with the community. The people are linked into the community, they live in it. The church might have had some historic ministry. People in the community may have gone to the church in their youth, and they remember it. People see the building. It may be that the church is still continuing some kind of ministry in the community, maybe a mums and toddlers group, maybe an old people's kind of lunch. There are already community links that can be used for evangelism. You don't have to build from nothing. Now, it may be difficult if the church has a bad reputation in the community. Often that's not the case. The church has just become invisible. But there are links and connections that are there. And then finally, in many small churches we have found there are often resources available. Counterintuitively, in my group of churches, the big churches often have no spare money. Because big churches invest everything in growing the ministry. Big churches are always looking to appoint the next staff, expand the building, start the next program. Big churches don't sit on lots of funds, or they shouldn't. Whereas small churches have often accumulated lots of money because people have given, but they haven't been paying a pastor, and they haven't really been doing anything. So often we found it surprising that a smaller church actually actually has quite a lot of money. I can think of a smaller church in London that needs revitalising that has over £300,000 in the bank that they could use. A building worth more than £2 million. What they lack is vision. But if you're a church planter, wouldn't you love to be given £300,000 in a £2 million building and not have to raise that yourself? I don't know whether you're into football, but lots of small churches think that big churches are like Manchester United. They think they've got unlimited resources and a brilliant second team that everybody else would love to have. But the reality is it's not like that. Large churches are stretched. And often the small churches, in fact, have more available resource. And the challenge in revitalisation is often that small churches will waste that money over many years just keeping going. And if you can revitalise them at the right moment, those resources can be used for the gospel. It can give a great start. So buildings, core congregation, connections and available resources. So revitalisation can happen just at a local level with individual churches, maybe individual revitalisers coming to them. What are the advantages of a denominational or network strategy? In other words, what's the benefit of looking at the bigger picture? Well, I think there are several. The network or the denomination is able to take a bigger overview, an awareness of the need. Most church leaders find it difficult to look beyond their immediate church. They know what's happening in their church, they know what's happening in their friends' churches, but they cannot step back and take a bigger view. They often have a distorted view of other churches and what's happening, because they don't have the perspective from which to view it. Networks and denominations can look at the whole and assess what's happening. That means that from the centre, if you're gathering all the information, you can spot the opportunities. You can be aware what are the churches that need revitalising. Where are the most important places for revitalising? Where's most strategic for the gospel? Where are the churches with the best buildings and most resources for revitalising? So you can plan sensibly and direct your efforts in the most effective way. Again, I think one of the most helpful things we have done has been to try to understand about those 160, 200 small churches. And begin to, as it were, have a sense of what are the best opportunities for revitalisation. So the denomination can have an understanding of the opportunity. It's also able to pull together resources and experience. So revitalisation, I think, requires particular skills. How do you relate to an older, smaller congregation? What soft skills do you need to win them over? What models of revitalisation work well? And one of the best things you can do is share expertise and what has worked. That helps people to avoid making mistakes. It gives them ideas as to what they can do. And so the network or the denomination can bring together the people who have the experience so that they can encourage one another, learn from one another, and train others to do the same work. So it's almost within the denomination or the network, it's almost like running a permanent year-round mentoring group of people who are encouraging each other. And one of the results of that is that people who might not think they could revitalise a church discover that they can. And they discover that there are other people they can turn to for advice and for help. So much of it is about connecting people. Again, The advantage of a network or a denomination is it might be possible to have dedicated staff to focus on this area of ministry. We have moved faster forwards because Phil has been working for us. That has enabled the whole revitalisation strategy to move many times more quickly because somebody is focused on that work. And again, denominations and networks can have those resources available. Again, it's the network can do the job of connecting sort of resources and opportunities. And those resources might be money and people. So somebody needs to connect a revitalisation opportunity with leaders who will be able to revitalise and the money that's needed to do it. So you need all of those things to come together. And the network can do the job of trying to make those connections. So identifying where are the leaders who would be good at doing revitalisation, who've got a heart for it, who've got the gifts for it. It then might be suggesting to them opportunities that you're aware of and building relational connections. It might then be, if a revitalisation project is a possibility, connecting up with funders and donors or churches that might give to enable that revitalisation to take place. In many cases, revitalisation needs to be a long-term commitment of investment. It will take time for a church to turn around. And so it needs somebody who is prepared to stick it out. And it needs the resourcing to make that possible. So you can connect up resources. Denominations and networks, because of those advantages of the expertise, the people that they can employ, they can develop tools to help churches be revitalised. There are plenty of tools available that help churches to self-assess, think through how they identify their needs, help them to know whether they'd be willing to change. But generally, tools need to be contextualised to a particular country and situation. So American resources might not work directly in your context because it's a different world. In America, they might be talking about revitalisation when a church has got 200 people. We'd call that a big church. For us, 400 would be a mega church. It's a different context. And somebody has to take the principles of other resources but contextualise them for your specific situation. And often it's denominations or networks who have people who can do that, who can tailor good ideas for a different context. And if you want a revitalisation strategy, you probably need to produce your own indigenous contextualised resources to enable revitalisation to take place in your situation. So denominations, sometimes a very gifted individual could do that. But even if a gifted individual can do it, actually the denomination or network can then spread that to everybody else and bring it to everybody else's attention. Obviously, identifying potential revitalisers, one of the things we're very keen to do is raise up new leaders for churches, train pastors and planters. We want at the earliest stage to be giving people a vision for revitalisation. One of our challenges is we now have more future pastors than probably good jobs to go to. Many of our larger and thriving churches already have full pastoral teams. Younger guys coming into ministry will need to go to a new church plant or maybe to a revitalisation, a smaller church that needs turning round. So we need to envision them from a very early stage of the benefits of revitalisation. Many of them will need to realise that there won't be a job for them to go and lead a large, growing city centre church. Because there aren't many jobs like that available compared to the number of people. So younger leaders, we need to envision and equip for church revitalisation and help them to see that that is a really valuable ministry. It's not a failure to end up revitalising a smaller church rather than going and leading a bigger church. And networks and denominations can communicate that all the different kinds of ministries are important because they contribute to the gospel picture as a whole. That it's not just one kind of ministry that is the best. Denominations and networks can then encourage revitalisation because what they're able to do is showcase to all the churches the successes that have been achieved. Again, one of the most powerful things you can do is show all of your churches how God has been at work in successful revitalisations. So we have a family of 600 churches, and if we can help those 600 churches to rejoice in what has been done, then it will encourage them to do the same. So the news can be spread. We do that by a combination of videos, web articles. We make sure that there are reports into our conferences. We want to highlight all the successes and help people see how that success was brought about and how that has advanced the gospel. We also carefully want to be able to talk about the failures, because it's important that people also know why things have not gone well or what the challenges have been. You have to be more careful in the way you do that. You don't necessarily get up and say, here was a church that could have been revitalised, but none of the leaders wanted to change. Everybody be very cross with them. But there are ways in which you can communicate what are the challenges to revitalisation so that an honest picture is presented. Those are the advantages of denominations. Let me say what some of the disadvantages are of a denominational or network strategy. Well, not disadvantages, some of the potential dangers. A first potential danger is that you can create the expectation that every church ought to be revitalised. If you say our denominational or network strategy is revitalisation, every small church will think you can solve their problems for them. Every small church might think, great, they're going to help us change and be revitalised. But a denominational strategy doesn't promise to revitalise every church. Some churches shouldn't be revitalised. They should be encouraged to close well. Some churches will refuse to be revitalised, and there's no point investing your time. So it might appear that you're promising revitalisation to everyone, but you can never really be doing that or delivering that. So there will be potentially some churches that are disappointed because you've started a revitalisation strategy, but they're not being revitalised. In the end, every denomination, every network has limited resources. We all have limited resources of time and money. And so therefore we have to prioritise. And the churches that are not helped will potentially feel alienated because they weren't made the priority. But the network and the denomination can't revitalise everybody. Secondly, there might be a reluctance to close churches that really ought to close. And that's because as networks and denominations, we like to keep account of how many churches we've got. Nobody likes their numbers of churches to decline. You become a leader of a network, say, with 300 churches. You don't want to say that as a result of our revitalisation strategy, 50 churches have now closed. Nobody likes that. And there becomes a denominational or network loyalty to one another that is a pressure to keep every work open. Again, we need to be honest that some particular churches will probably be best closed. and that the best thing they can do for the gospel is to close in a good way that rejoices in what God has done, but that uses their resources in a better way for the future. So if there is an expectation that no church should ever shut, I don't think you'll have a good revitalization strategy. I had a different network I was dealing with, or somebody I was dealing with who had been involved in church revitalization in my group. His philosophy was, Jesus said, I will build my church and the gates of Hades will not prevail against it. Therefore, no church should ever shut. I think that's a category mistake. Because when Jesus says, I will build my church, he's not talking about each and every individual local church. He's talking about his body as a whole. But there are some people in some networks who will have that view that says each and every individual local church should never ever shut. And in a revitalization strategy, I think you have to be honest that sometimes churches need to close. And as a network or a denominational leader, that can be painful because people don't like to hear that. Creating unrealistic hopes, that's closely associated with that. When you introduce a revitalization strategy, many people on the ground will not realise how long it takes and how much work is involved. They will often expect very quick results. But churches often take at least a year even to begin to engage with revitalization seriously. And in many cases, the fruits of revitalization will take a number of years to emerge as the church is kind of led by new people and begins to gain a new gospel vision. This is not quick progress. Often church planting into particularly cities sees very quick growth. You get some good leaders, a lot of young people come and join them, and you can grow from being a small planting team to being quite a big group quite quickly. When I planted my church in Birmingham, we began with 25 of us. We became 150 in about a year. But that's just because lots of people move to the city and you attract them. Revitalization is a slower process. And people need to have realistic expectations. And again, connected with this, there's the problem that the smaller churches often think you can solve their problems. Many small churches, when you say you've got a revitalization strategy, what they think you mean is we're going to give you money and we're going to magically send you people. That's what they think you're going to be able to do. So they then start saying, well, you know, yeah, we want some money to do this to our building, and please, can you get that church down the road to send us 20 people and it'll all be fine? What they don't understand is why those 20 people don't want to come to the church. And, so the smaller churches can expect you to solve their problems, whereas in fact your job is to help them to face their own problems and decide to solve them for themselves. I think one of the advantages of my particular network and the way that we work is because we're independent churches, in a way that helps us because there is nothing we can do to solve the church's problems. They have to make their own decisions. Actually, that helps from two points of view. It means that when we go into a church to engage in the process, they know that we can never make them shut. Whatever our advice might be, they don't have to take it. So we don't have the power to close them down, which means we're not as big a threat as a denomination that may be coming in and saying, change or we shut you. On the other side, we don't have any power to bring about change. But that means they have to work it through for themselves. It means that we cannot solve the problem. They have to be willing to adopt their own solution. Okay, so what are the essentials then of a denominational or network strategy for revitalization? This is just summing up what we've learned. Well, what is essential is a leadership vision and a visionary leadership. Only if the network or denomination has a leadership with a vision for revitalization will it be possible within the group of churches. And actually, that probably means that whoever is the senior or the more dominant leader of the network or the denomination has to share the vision. So whoever is the public face, whoever is the most significant leader, has to be committed to it, or else otherwise it probably won't happen. If you've got a network or movement led by a person who's only interested in church planting, revitalization will never really get a look in. It needs to be led from the front as part of an integrated vision for the network. Expertise, you need gifted people who have done revitalizations, who know what is involved. If you don't yet have those in your network, borrow somebody from another network for a bit, so that people in your network or denomination can learn and develop those expertise. You don't have to reinvent everything from the beginning. There are plenty of people who have been doing revitalization. You just need to bring within your network or denomination expertise and help people to develop expertise. So dedicated staff, people for whom this is their primary responsibility, who can give it the time, the energy and the focus that's needed. You need the support of data analysis and information gathering. So much of effective gospel ministry is about understanding the real situation on the ground. Data and information are key to gospel strategy. Now, I'm absolutely committed to preaching the word, prayer, the work of God by his Spirit. But to make sensible strategic decisions, we also need accurate information. Accurate information about the churches, about their communities, about the situation, that the network needs to be able to provide that. You need resources. And as I've said, I think key is the buy-in from the larger churches and their leaders who are willing to get behind it and see it as a gospel strategy. It needs genuine love for the smaller churches. Revitalization will never be successful if other leaders basically have a contempt for the smaller church or look down on the smaller church. You need to have a genuine love for them, for the people, and for the ministry faithfulness that they've shown. One of the problems with leaders of larger churches and those who are more thrusting is that we just get very frustrated with the small churches and their smaller mindset. We need to cultivate a love, but combine that with a hard-headed realism. Not a sentimentality, but an honesty about reality. But it needs to be that mix of love and a realism. And then lastly, I think celebrating and communicating any successes. We want to be rejoicing in what the Lord is doing. You find that in the New Testament. Paul and the apostles are constantly rejoicing in everything they hear from the churches that is gospel advance. My experience in a network is that in reality, there is far more exciting gospel work and progress going on than most church members and church leaders know. That's because they're only experiencing their little bit. One of the great things to do is communicate how God is at work across the network. And when people hear that, they are encouraged. So for example, we want, if a church is having baptisms and they've heard of conversions, why don't we want the whole load group of churches to rejoice in that? God has been at work. And the same is true with revitalization. We want the network of churches to be rejoicing in successful revitalizations. So that's just an overview of what we have done to try to bring about a network strategy. We haven't got it perfectly right. We're still learning. There's much more that we can do. But one thing we can say is we're doing more now than we were doing 4 years ago. And that is having a positive impact on the advance of the gospel and contributing to our overall gospel vision and objectives. Thank you for being so patient and for listening. I hope it's been helpful to you to give that overview. Thank you very much indeed.